Hello and welcome to the Recovery from Relapse panel discussion. My name is Ziva. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. While the topic of this panel is recovery from relapse and the speakers, we all have experience in this particular area, this panel is open to everyone. We will each introduce ourselves and qualify for 20 minutes on the topic of what it's like to work a program of recovery, relapse and lose that recovery, but manage to pick up the tools and recover again one day at a time. Is there someone in the audience that would be willing to be the timer?
Okay.
So please give each speaker 10 minutes warning, then 5, 2, and then the one that time is up. Thank you very much. And our first speaker is Carol.
Hi, my name is Carol, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
Carol. Hi. I'm going to start with I'm really, really nervous, and just let that go, because God is in charge, not me. I was the oldest girl of two children. My brother was 4 years younger than me. I was born to a Catholic mom and a Jewish dad. And mom really grew up very, very poor. So anytime I wanted to eat anything, she was happy that we had food and didn't stop me with anything. My dad's mom did not like when I went to their house and was picking at the candy that was always out. She would say, no. And I thought she was mean, like I didn't know. You know, she was looking out for me. But that was that kind of part. And then we were born on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and we used to go to Staten Island in the summer and have a bungalow down there. And the story, as it was told to me over and over and over over the years, was I was a little girl, and I went out to play after my mom gave me breakfast, and the people in the next bungalow would say, Carol, did you eat anything? And I would say, no, and I would go have a second breakfast. Now, that's like, I'm talking like 3-4 years old. So that's, somehow it was built into me. You know, what does a 3 or 4 year old know about overeating? I mean, my goodness, but I had it. And I've seen it in a grandchild of mine too. You know, one of many kids, and it's just like in her. So we eventually moved out to Queens, and my mom was not happy. She was very sad about leaving her 3 sisters, 2 brothers, and her mother back in New York, in Manhattan. So I forget that I'm not in New York and you don't know where I'm talking about. So anyway, we moved to Queens, and mom was sad, and I became like a worrier about her benefit, you know, making sure she was okay. When my mom and dad would have an argument about something, I was always like trying to protect her. And my father worked a lot, was rarely home. Those days he worked 6 days a week. And on the seventh day, he would come home, take us all into Manhattan so my mother could visit the family. I mean, I don't know how he did it, because he went into Manhattan every day to work. So it was probably grueling for him, but I never even thought about it. My father was the type of guy, he used to kid around with a skinny cousin of mine. And he would say, hey, skinny, how you doing? Or he'd call her Stretch. But he never joked around with me, and I used to think about that, you know. I used to feel sad that he had this fun relationship with my cousin and practically nothing with me, you know. So one time he was painting the bedroom, and he hated painting the windows, you know. And I said, I could do that. And he said, you think you can? And I said, yeah. And I used to just very carefully paint around the windows. I did such a good job. I got the job every time we painted a room. You know, I would do anything to have a relationship with him, even if it was just to sit and paint the window. So it was kind of strange kind of life with my father, because he was rarely around. He was always working. And I always got the feeling that I was not enough. I was not enough of a daughter. I was not enough of a friend. It was really hard. I had a skinny cousin. I had a lot of cousins. My mom was from a big family, and my dad had two brothers. So I just, I had a very skinny cousin, and then on the other side of the family, I had a very smart cousin who got top grades and everything. And when I was in school, I was just worrying about my mom. Was she okay at home? What was happening? We used to sneak and go into the city by a bus and a train and come home and not tell my father we went in. He could have drove us home. I used to beg for my mother, please tell daddy we're here so we didn't have to take a bus and a train home. You know, so it was hard. It wasn't easy. I was really heavy and gaining weight. And I used to blame it on my mom that I worried about her. But then today, as I was trying to write down things and see, it's hard to look back. And because I joined OA in 73, so I'm trying to look back 40 years of things to tell my story. But where was I? I was getting very heavy. Used to be called, my brother used to call me Carol the Barrel. I used to be called Porky on the block with the kids on the block. So I was quite a chubby kid. But at 13, I started slimming down. I used to walk to high school, walk to the candy store, the local luncheonette up on the avenue, where I started hanging out with kids and did a lot of walking, played handball, and I started to slim down. At 13 years of age, a friend of mine introduced me to my husband in the back of a movie theater. Not a good thing. Hope my grandchildren never hear this tape. And, you know, we were going out now and then he'd meet another girl, and he ditched me, and it was like crazy. But then when I was 15, I came home one day. My mother knew him well. And he was 4 years older than I, 4 and a half years older than I was. And she said, Jack came over with his father. They brought you an engagement ring. He wants to get engaged. I was 15. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, wow. So I was excited. What the heck did I know? But when I think about it, we had an older cousin that got pregnant when she was 17. And I think all the sisters got together and did their little buzzing back and forth and said, we better get these kids married off. Because my skinny cousin got married the same year I did. She was a year older than I was. So I was engaged, and we went looking for dresses. And my mother-in-law and father-in-law found a good store because my mom and dad didn't have a lot of money. And I got my dress and had to go for fittings. Now I stopped walking to the boulevard, playing handball, and gaining weight. And I almost didn't fit into the dress. The lady that was doing the fitting said to me one day, you're not going to fit in this dress if you don't stop. You know, and I was in there alone with her. And I said, I will stop. And she said, are you pregnant? And I said, no, I'm not. So she said, you better stop eating. So anyway, I got married, and we moved in with my mom and dad. And I had a little boy about a year and a half later. And then we moved to Long Island and bought a house. And then I had another boy and another boy. So I had three sons by the time I was 23 years old. Children, bringing up children, my husband and I. And it was exciting, though, to have my own place and not have to listen to my mom say, you know, I am cooking dinner, I'm not cooking dinner. She had something to say about everything. And I was very happy to be in my own home. After my second son, I had gained a lot of weight. Never got it off. And then I got pregnant again, so I was really heavy. I would say I would think I was about 130-something when I got married, and now I'm probably up to 180, 190, something like that. I tried many, many diets. I wrote them down here because I could never remember them all. I tried a liquid diet, Air Force diet, where you count carbohydrates, count calories, diet pills that were uppers and downers when I had no clue what I was taking. I had this cousin that got pregnant. She came over one day, and she said, "What are you doing? You're losing weight." I said, "I'm taking these pills," and I show her these pills, and she goes, "Oh, can I have some of those, and I'll take some of those." She knew what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even know I was taking uppers and downers. I tried hypnosis, the grapefruit diet, Think Thin with Murray Siegel, where we ate for breakfast what we ate for dinner the night before, but in a smaller portion. I don't know what the heck that was. I mean, just ridiculous. Then I joined TOPS, Take Off Pounds Sensibly, where they put a pig on you if you gain weight, and you have to sit with the pig on you the whole meeting. I mean, it was just awful. Okay. And Weight Watchers several times. Weight Watchers came out right after my second son, and Gene Neidich with the Weight Watcher plan, and I tried that. But I didn't have money for the scale, and I just tried to wing it, and I wound up gaining 2 pounds the first week, so I wasn't happy with Weight Watchers. And I tried it several more times throughout the 40 years, even within the program, and I just couldn't catch the gold charm or whatever, the gold ring or whatever you call it. I also went to many gyms, had personal trainer within program. I used to sneak food all the time. Somebody at one of the meetings was talking about ice cream. Ice cream is like my nemesis. If I get into that box, it's gone. And I used to really buy box after box after box. Also, as I came in program because I heard David Susskind on TV. Us older folks here remember David Susskind. He had a talk show, and I think he had Roseanne on. I'm not really sure, but I heard OA mentioned, and I looked for the program and found a meeting and went to the meeting. All we had was the AA 12 and 12. I used to take a pen and circle the first A and an O because I could not make the connection with an alcoholic and an overeater. And then we just had the little 24-hour-a-day book, and that was it. That's what we went on. And gray sheet, good old gray sheet. I lost a ton of weight. I lost 100 pounds in no time. And I thought my first sponsor was not, I don't know. I didn't think she gave me the steps, and I thought she was too spiritual at the time. Much too spiritual. Could you imagine? I look back and I think, where is she today? I don't even know. It's a long time ago. That was 76 I lost that weight. In 77, my husband had a heart attack. And he had several heart attacks. I realize my time's running out. He had several heart attacks, and he passed away in 1990. He was 51 years old. And I was a widow at 46. So it was like the saddest time of my life. Nothing I could do could help him. Doctors switched medications. He did live to see my kids married. My three boys got married. And when my second guy got married, I didn't think he was going to make it through that wedding. But we went to a new doctor, switched medications, and he got a little bit better for like a year. I'm like all over the place now. My dad passed away in 84. That was a shocker because he got sick and then was gone in 3 months. My mom moved in with me, and my two boys were still home. My husband was okay at that time. You know, as I was writing all of this down, I realized that I talk about everybody. My husband, my mother, my kids, my this. But where do I fit into all of this? You know, they were foremost on my mind and still are as I tell this story, because I go back to being who I was. Today, I really try and think about myself. My youngest guy, he was diagnosed with leukemia, and he passed away in 2 years at the age of 33. All I did was eat. I swear, all I wanted to do was eat. All through all these things that I went through, I couldn't stay abstinent, and I needed that food to help me through my life. And as I look back at it now, I really have very little regrets about that. I just needed what I needed to get through. But today, I worry about my boys that are left. They're both in their 50s, and both of them have had cancer, and they're married with kids, and I worry about their kids getting things, and worry, 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 but where is that going to get me but stay in the head, you know, my head in the box, and I don't want to be there. I have to take care of myself because I need to live my life. I'm not living their life. They're old enough. They live their own life. I can't do things for them. I tried to help one of my kids, and I did. I helped them a lot, but I think I helped them too much, that they didn't think they could stand on their own 2 feet and do what they needed to do. So I don't know if it was help. You know, I look back at it, and I'm not sure. So in January of 2014, I came to the birthday party, and I heard a speaker that talked about relapse, and I thought, oh, my God, she's got something that I want. She talked about having a program that wasn't perfect. Program that's not perfect. Oh, my God, who is that? Not me. I have to be perfect. I have to do it perfect. Right, no matter what. And I couldn't do it. I was batting my head against the wall. So I could be a little imperfect and still be abstinent. New idea. So I was going to go home and call her. I asked her for her phone number, and I was going to call her. That was a great trip for me out here from New York. I went to Palm Springs. We went to Vegas with friends. And I went home, and I had Niagara Falls in my home. My pipes had frozen and broken the house. The whole perimeter of my home was leaking with water, and I was out of my home for 7 months. I gained 25 pounds in 7 months. I had a little kitchen with a little corner that I called my carb corner. I had it stocked with everything you could imagine, and I emptied it. Went shopped, came back, and put more. And that's how I got through that 7 months. But, you know, I had to do what I had to do. I just didn't know what to do. I was fighting with insurance companies. I had to get a public adjuster to fight for me. It was really insane. About a month before I was to move back in my home, I had a heart attack. And it was from stress. It was called a vasospasm. There was a spasm in my heart from stress. No damage was done. The muscle released, and I'm okay. I take a lot of medication so it doesn't happen again. But, you know, I've had thyroid cancer. I've had a lot of things. But today I can sit here and tell you that I'm abstinent for over a year. I am a miracle. I feel like a miracle. And if you're struggling, don't leave before that miracle happens to you. Keep at it. Don't give up on yourself. It's so worth it. You're so worth it. I missed so many things I wanted to say to you. But I now have 9 grandkids, 1 great-grandchild, 1 on the way. My husband lived to see 1 great-grandchild, 1 grandchild, not great-grandchild. And my abstinence today is a flexible program. I am not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I do stay away from sugar. I limit carbs. Today I couldn't eat the chicken for lunch. I don't know why. I couldn't eat it. I don't know whether I was nervous for now, but you know what? I'm not going to starve to death between now and dinner. So, you know, it is what it is. Some days are better than others, but I call a sponsor. I have had so many sponsors, over 40 years of sponsors, 30 years or more were in relapse. I lost 100 pounds twice in this program. I now weigh, I think, under 190, but I'm not, maybe a smidge under, but I'm on my way down again. I'm not in a hurry. I'm going to get there when I get there. I do pray for the willingness to exercise. That is such a dirty word to me. Oh, God in heaven. I'd rather say the F word than the E word. But I'm working on it. And thank you for listening.
Hi, my name is Ziva, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Okay, so I have been in program for 35 years, and December 22nd, I celebrated 8 years of abstinence. Thank you. So, what's the math? 35, 8. For 27 years, I was in relapse. And I was born in Israel, as you can tell, I guess, by my accent. I was born into a family where there was a lot of discomfort, anxiety, and depression. And I think that from a very, very young age, as young as 2, I found food as my savior. Food helped me regulate that anxiety and this uncertainty and made me feel taken care of and safe. And I'm grateful for food because I think if I didn't have food, I probably would have ended up being insane. So I had that food that saved me, and I think it was around my teen years that I crossed the line from using food in a way that saved me to abusing food in a way that hurt me. And starting in my teen years until much later, I started this cycle. I was never a yo-yo dieter, so it wasn't gaining and losing. It was binging and recovering. That was my cycle. So when I was binging over a period of time, I would be broken from the binges. I would suffer terrible indigestion. I was lethargic. I was not present. I was not active. And then I would recover, and that would be my cycle. And I think it was in my late 20s, I don't think, I know, at 29, close to 30, is when I came to OA in Israel. And from the very first meeting, I fell in love with the program. I found that the people that I met were people that I could relate to, people who understood my language and understood my story. But I had no clue about recovery. I mean, the first book we translated in Israel to Hebrew was Food for Thought, not the big book. So it's like, I mean, it was a group of wonderful, wonderful women, and I know the program changed dramatically, and now OA Israel is really strong. And I've lived here for 33 years, so I was there only 2 years in program. And then I moved here, and I was married, I had a child. It was a very, very dysfunctional marriage, and I just had this cycle that I would go to program and I would try really, really hard to get what you have. And I lived in Massachusetts, New York, California, and Israel, and in all those places I met so many wonderful people in recovery, and I wanted so desperately to have what they have, but I just couldn't get it. There was only one time, there were 3 times in program that I got thin, not in recovery, and it's when I did How. And I know How is a program that works miracles for some people, and that's wonderful. For me, it was a very punitive way of working the program. That was just my experience. And I lost in-house 75 pounds 3 times. But the minute I stopped doing it, I would gain those 75 pounds in like 5 minutes. So it didn't work for me. And, you know, over the years, you know, and I feel like I'm repeating myself because I've said it every time I share, but that's my story, that I realized that those people that had what I want, and what I want changed from 21, from 29 to 50. At 29, I wanted somebody who was thin. And at 50, what attracted me was men and women who had a healthy relationship with their body, with people in their life, and with food. And I realized that there was only one thing, one, that those people had in common. It wasn't their gender, their religion, their ethnicity, their social economical place in society. There is only one thing. They were willing, just willing, to have a relationship with a higher power. And again, this is OA. I mean, I'm sure that if I went to Weight Watchers, the common denominator will be different. But I couldn't do any diet. And the thing that attracted me were people who had a relationship with a God of their own understanding. And that's the one thing that I was shut down to. My mother lost her family in the Holocaust. And I grew up with a mother that was clinically depressed and that who said there is no God. Because if there was God, my 7 brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces would not have been slaughtered. So I never went to temple, religious connection. And here I am struggling with this addiction that is killing me, and I am binging my brains out and then lying in bed like half sitting because I would throw up in my sleep from the binges. I mean, I was like in terrible pain. And those people that I admire have a God, and they're from different religions. But I can't, you know, get there. And then I read a book that is an outside book, but it's a story about a spiritual leader that his son had a disease and died. And he said in the book that it challenged his belief, you know, when his own child got sick. But what he understood is that when bad things happen, God cries. And that line changed my life. Because I realized that there are a lot of bad things that happen in the world, but God doesn't do those bad things. God, my God, cries when those things happen. So that was for me what opened the door to the willingness to entertain the thought that there is a power greater than me. And that happened about 10, 15 years ago. So the other thing that I did, I also went to outside help because my disease of compulsive overeating, and I think it's not just me, many of us, it's a disease that has a lot of self-hate and self-aggression. And I needed to find out where is this self-hate coming from. So I went to therapy, and we don't need to go into it right now, but what therapy helped me, combined with my willingness to search for a God, it gave me the ability to sit through discomfort. Before that, I wasn't able to sit through discomfort. If I was upset at you, I would binge. If I was a little angry, I would binge. If I was scared, I would binge. If I was too excited, I would binge. I just couldn't sit through discomfort. And reaching out to a God and meditating and building my faith also helped me sit through discomfort. And I'm not, you know, I still have a long way to go because there are times when I find myself eating a bigger meal or making a choice that is not great because I'm anxious or scared or angry. So it's a work in progress. It's not like I've got it all licked. So 8 years ago, I became willing by the grace of God to give up desserts. And that was the beginning of my abstinence. So for the last 8 years, I didn't touch anything that you would see on a dessert menu as a dessert. So I did eat at the beginning some health bars, that have sugar and are not good for me, but you will never go into the restaurant and on the dessert menu you'll see health bar. So that was my definition. If it is on a dessert menu, I can't have it. And then, you know, a few years ago, I realized that health bars are made maybe for athletes or for people that, you know, don't travel and don't eat for 6 hours, but they're not meant for somebody who is at all times 5 minutes from the kitchen. So I gave up health bars by the grace of God 2 years ago. And then I realized that chips became a problem because there are all those healthy chips now. You go to Trader Joe's, there is adzuki bean chips. Sounds like beans, but I cannot eat. Anyway, so I gave up chips, so I haven't had that. But still, I was struggling with being two sizes to above what I want to be. And I was just praying for the willingness, to make loving and kind choices for my body and move more. That was my prayer. And about 4.5 years ago, I discovered that I feel good when I go and do water exercise. And at the beginning, I did it once a week on a Saturday in a pool in Culver City. And the pool is only open from June to October. So from October to May, I was like resting on my laurels and feeling like I'm a hero. And then I continued to pray. And about 4 years ago, in October, I joined a pool and I started exercising in water 3 to 4 times a week before work. This is a fucking miracle. Because I'm telling you, I'm 65. I have 3 grown children who have never seen me exercise in their life because it all happened after they all moved away from home. And my daughter was just visiting from out of town with her family, her husband and child, and she couldn't believe that at 6:30 in the morning, I'm leaving the house going to the pool. This is a miracle. And then 2 months ago, I saw a doctor, and the doctor told me, you know, the water exercise strengthens your body, and it's wonderful, but it's not enough because it doesn't do cardio work. So I bought in an estate sale a bike that is now in my bedroom next to my bed, and I am on days that I'm not in the pool, I do the bike. Now, do I do cardio work on the bike? No. I never even sweat one drop of sweat since I bought it. However, I started with 10 minutes, and I'm now up to 25. So maybe when I get to 40, I'll start sweating. But this is the main message that I want to give you for me, is that as much as this was a disease of self-hate and aggression, my recovery is a recovery of gentleness, tenderness, and self-love. There is no anger and hate. There are, and again, nothing is perfect. There are days that I can call a fellow and say, I'm very upset with myself because I overate last night. Nothing is perfect. There are those days. But I would say that 87% of the time, and don't ask me where this number comes from.
I think it's 92.
92 now. 92% of the time, I live a life with integrity. I feel comfortable with the choices I make. I used prayer and meditation in my day all the time. And I live a life that I want to continue to live, that life. And the other 8%, it used to be 13, now it's 8%, my choices are not great and there is a lot of place for improvement. Now, the thing that I struggle with the most today, and that the more I put the food down, the more this happens, is catastrophizing thoughts. Now, I think that because my mother, I grew up with a mother that the end of the world happened to her. One morning, her entire family was slaughtered. No preparation, nothing, one morning. So this was real. For her, it wasn't catastrophizing, and I feel almost like I was given that tendency in the breast milk. She never nursed me. In the milk, in whatever. But it's like I'm catastrophizing, and I realize now that when I was binging, I didn't catastrophize as much because my feelings were numb. And now that my eating is so much more healthier and my portions are smaller, and I'm in such a better place. I find these intrusive thoughts intruding into my psychic a lot of the day. Now, the only good thing is that I don't engage in it. So I'll give you like three examples. One, I'm sharing a room in the hotel with a dear friend of mine from New York. And last night, before we are falling asleep, after like laughing and chatting, I suddenly had this vision that I'm getting a stroke in my sleep and she finds me dead in the morning. Okay? So the thought came, but the good thing is that I didn't engage in it. I didn't say, oh, and when, who should she call? What shall we do? Would she find my partner's phone? Nothing. The thought came, and the next thing I visualized is a stop sign, like when you drive, a red stop sign, and I said to myself, thank you for sharing, and I did some meditation, lying down in bed. I said, I'm doing good, I'm exercising, I'm physically more fit than I was, and I just named all the things I'm doing, and then I fell asleep. So I can't control those thoughts, and the more abstinent I am, and the cleaner my food, the more they happen. But at least, it's like somebody said in meditation, that meditation is like seeing the thoughts move in a train and pass by. Or I know some meditation people talk about clouds. So I don't, for me, it's not so much a cloud. It's more like a tank, like a military train with those thoughts. But at least it goes away and I don't engage. But this is what I'm struggling with, and it happens to me all the time. So probably in a day it can happen 20 times, but it's a thought that is like a second and I don't engage. It goes away. So that's, you know, so what is that? I talked already 15?
Five.
Okay. So I'm sitting more with discomfort now. I'm reaching out to a higher power. I'm exercising. And yes, the last thing I would share is one of the things I was praying in the last 8 years is to be willing to cut down on, not cut down, to make better choices with food. And I finally became willing, and 2.5 months ago, I went to a nutritionist who specializes with eating disorders. And I'm eating now in a very different way than I used to eat. And it's a way that if you told me that that's how you eat 10 years ago, I would say, you know, that's terrible. But I'm eating a lot of wholesome food, and I'm eating 5 times a day, smaller meals and bigger snacks. So every meal is about the same amount, and I don't crave food. So as I said, my choices sometimes are bigger because there are still feelings that I have a hard time sitting through. But when I eat that way, I am just not craving. And for me, it's so foreign because, you know, it's new. So again, it's only 2.5 months, so I hope to meet you here next year to see if it's really lasted longer. But I'm hopeful. And the other thing that I wanted to say that had to do with food, and I completely forgot. So maybe later when you ask questions. So anyway, I think that it's fine even if I didn't finish my 20 minutes, and I'll talk more later when you ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Roberta, grateful recovered compulsive overeater. It's really hard to be on a panel with friends because you get so involved with their stories. But I came into program in 1979. I had heard about OA in the early 70s when I joined a consciousness-raising group. And I was big in Weight Watchers then, and I was a leader. And I remember them telling me they go to Overeaters Anonymous, and they went out for lunch together, and I was kind of, go out for lunch together. You know, Weight Watchers to me was more of a competitive thing. You would never tell anybody your secrets. And here these people seem to have a true feeling for each other and connection to each other. So when I came to the rooms, I wanted the thinnest prettiest woman in the room to sponsor me, and there was a cheerleader. She used to be a cheerleader in my high school, and so it was perfect. That's who I wanted. And I came in over 240 pounds, full of anger. I was approaching my 40th birthday, and I said, I better do something now. And I found that the weight came off easily. I went on Blue Sheet. I followed it. I wrote down my food every night. I gave it to my sponsor. I did the questions. But I was really on a diet. I didn't understand the full. I loved that you told me it was a disease and it wasn't my fault. So I stopped blaming. You know, that was good. The thing that I almost sent me out of the room was that I really didn't want to hear about God. I was pretty much an agnostic and didn't have any room in my life for God. I thought it was all self-propelled. You know, you go after what you want and you make your own life. Had no idea that it was a spiritual program. So I did very well physically. I lost my 100 pounds in a year, and after 6 months of keeping it off in 1981, I started overeating again. So I figured I needed a stricter food plan. Gray sheet, that was going to be the answer. And, you know, that was that punishing mentality. It was that diet mentality. I needed to be stricter. It was beating myself up for taking a little bit more than I was supposed to. And just the whole sort of emphasis in the early days when I was with OA, I didn't realize it was a 12-step program. I thought it was all about working the tools. There was a lot of talk about the tools and the telephone, and that's what the questions were about. So I don't think, you know, I understood the concept of a 12-step program. So from 1981 till 2002, I was in relapse and some recovery, and I'd have a day, and I'd have 2 hours, and I'd have 3 months, and various periods of recovery, always followed by the relapse, because even though I was doing the work emotionally, I worked through the steps, I did my fourth step, my first fourth step was the APOR book, and then I did four steps using the big book, and even though I worked through things emotionally, I sought outside help, I still went back to the food for my comfort and my, you know, to fill the void at certain times in my life. I went through a divorce. I started dating for the first time in my life because I believe I was a compulsive eater from very young and never dated. I married my husband because he asked me. He was 20 years older than I was. We have two beautiful children. And my relationship with men was always strained. I didn't feel comfortable around men. So I spent many years in relapse in this program. I went to 3, 4, 5 meetings a week. And I went to a wonderful big book study, and I remember reading some of the stories, and then we'd share around the room. But I never felt pure when I was sharing, because it was like I'd stop on the way home, get an ice cream, I'd have bagels in the car waiting for me. I still needed the food to kind of get through my life. And it wasn't until 2002 when I had already retired from teaching, and I said, is this all there is? I mean, I was still kind of dragging myself out of bed in the morning, barely getting to one meeting a week at that time, and just realized finally, you know, it's a spiritual program. I've got to get somebody to work with that's going to help me find a personal God, help me to understand that I need a higher power, help me to get through this big book and really make sense of it. So I wanted a Jewish sponsor because I grew up Jewish, and I thought that's what I need. But the person that I found very spiritual, and I found her spiritual for a few reasons. When she drove, she said she never went over the speed limit. And to me, that was a foreign concept. I figure you start at the speed limit and then keep going. And she just had an ease and a comfort about herself and was in acceptance, and she just looked peaceful, and she helped me. By that time, my son had become religious. He had become Orthodox. He was a rabbi. And so I was always seeking a higher power in certain ways. In college, I remember trying to be religious. And when he became religious, I decided I'm going to kosher the house. I'm going to have that God. I was always looking to your God and what worked for you. I tried smoking pot. I tried transcendental meditation. I tried S training. I was always looking outside, not realizing. The sponsor helped me to see that I had to get something that resonated with me. What is God? She gave, you know, that was my first assignment, to take a blank piece of paper and write down any words or phrases or ideas that helped me connect with God, with a higher power. And I really needed a personal God, like Bill talks about in the first chapter. I needed a personal God in my life. Many people are able to have a more objective idea about God, whether it's good orderly direction or in nature. Those are all parts of my God, but my God is also kind of bigger than that and has human qualities. You know, I feel hugged by God and loved by God. So I went on this path trying to seek spiritual help. I read all the meditation books from the library, so I wanted to get, you know, some meditation. And Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Buddhist monk, I liked some of his teachings, and it was just a simple mantra. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Living in the present moment, I know it is a wonderful moment. And that was kind of my first meditation. I would just sit and breathe and say that. And since then, I've heard about apps for my phone that I use and websites. And I like guided meditation a lot. And I went to the Omega Institute where they had a meditation weekend and learn different ways to meditate. I don't have one particular way, but I know that every morning, at least for 5 minutes, I am going to meditate. And I'm working on trying to increase that time. Because since 2002, when I was willing to seek a God, I have been abstinent. And that is a miracle. I had never had more than a year of abstinence, and now I have 13 and three-quarter years coming up. So that's a miracle. And I was able, in my relapses, I never gained back the whole 100. So I got some, you know, this program does spoil your ability to just eat without, you know, knowing the consequences. So I only gained 50 pounds in relapse and struggled with that for 22 years. And when I was willing to take the spiritual path, I was also willing to write down my food again. And even though my food plan has changed, but I would write down, I couldn't give up sugar. I wrote down, I'm going to have a Tootsie Pop. I'm going to have whatever it was that I wanted to eat. I wrote it down, and I stuck with it. And the honesty is what it's all about. Many of us are really allergic to sugar. I don't know. My body is not that sensitive to substances. I can have sugar. My friend was in town, and in the building that I live in, they have a coffee machine downstairs, so I've been having cappuccinos there. And I've also been getting sores in my mouth and not quite wondering why, you know, wondering why. First of all, I was abusing the Crystal Light lemonade because I had given up soda a few months ago. So I was, every water that I got had the Crystal Light, and that's acidic. And then she said, I'm getting a tingling on my tongue. And until she felt it, I am not that sensitive. So I'm not sensitive to sugar, particularly. I'd rather eat sugar than vegetables, that's true. But I can have anything in my diet. I say that in my food plan. I eat everything. I don't eat it often, but I don't want to restrict anymore. I dieted from the time I was 12 years old. My parents took me to the doctor because when we moved from Brooklyn, my little cozy Jewish neighborhood, to Valley Stream, which was more, you know, all ethnicities, I didn't feel as comfortable, and I went right to the food. And by eighth grade, I was 213 pounds. So I felt that, yes, I'm sensitive to sugar, but for some reason, God really removed the obsession. I don't want it anymore because I know what it does to me. You know, I can go to the morning after at the bar and see the vomit and see the, you know, everything disheveled. I don't want to go there with the food. So I allow myself to have it. I have it occasionally, but I think the thing that I realized is, you know, I never sort of think it's mine. You know, it's just, it's something, I can look like a normal person eating it, but I feel like I'm role-playing. It's not really the true person that I am, because the true person I am really wants to keep eating it. But somehow God has removed the obsession, and I can act like a normal person in a normal body. About 5 years ago, a few things have happened through the years. So in 2002, my sponsor said, why don't you make one of the rooms in your house? You know, I decided to turn it into my meditation room, my prayer room. And that was wonderful. I painted it a beautiful blue, and I put up all program sayings and things. And that helped me because I wanted to start the day with exercise. I said I learned in program in the early 80s that I needed to exercise, and I started doing that. And then, so I do, all I do now is walk, but it's important for me. And I wanted to do that first thing. I said, if I don't do it first thing in the morning, I'm not going to do it. And she convinced me to try to start the day with prayer and meditation, and that has been a wonderful tool for me. I don't start any day without, well, I shouldn't say that, because there are always exceptions. If I'm getting up early to catch a plane, I may do it there. But most days, I start my day, I write in my journal, I connect with God. And my second sponsor after that, other spiritual lady, taught me how to talk to God. And that was something I never knew. You know, I was Jewish, but God was not a presence in the house. It wasn't part of the religion or going to temple. So the people in these rooms taught me how to be spiritual and connect with God. So I talk to God all through the day when I get into my car, and it starts in the morning, just asking him to give me the willingness and the ability to choose wisely with my food, and to choose wisely with my words. And so the past 13 years, you know, I went from just living on the sidewalk to really living in the penthouse, feeling happy, joyous, and free. I was down to 140 pounds, which was 7 pounds lower than my Weight Watcher weight, and I was able to maintain it for about 10 years. There were several things that happened during that time. In 2006, I was chair of a Region 6 convention that we had in the Catskills, and the place flooded. It was a disastrous place. All the meeting rooms were leaking. The parking lot flooded. We had to move the cars. And when I was trying to move my car, I was driving deeper and deeper into the water. Karen remembers it. And, you know, I didn't take the cue that, you know, water's coming up in the car. Maybe that was always me. Keep pushing and pushing until finally I said, the car is floating. And I started, you know, there were angels out there that helped me push the car back. My friends and I bailed the water out. This car got us home 200 miles, which was amazing because the car was totaled. So it may not have been the smartest thing to drive home, but also in 2006, my son and daughter-in-law moved to Israel with my 6 grandchildren. And instead of bemoaning my fate, oh, how can you take my grandchildren from me, I realized this was a wonderful spiritual path for them. I couldn't have done that without this program, without learning to love what is and to appreciate everything I have. In 2008, I did a lot of service. Service helped me so much. Going to Region, going to World Service, and I decided I want to be a trustee, and I put my name out there and got very few votes. And that was really hard because I used to blame the fat. The fat was the reason I didn't get into the college sorority. My fat was the reason. And this was, here I was in a thin body. So I learned to take responsibility. I grew up a little bit more. And in 2012, Hurricane Sandy came and my house was totaled. And interesting enough, like they say, sometimes the challenges are the best teachers. It helped me to let go of my house on Long Island and living there for 73 years and move to Los Angeles where my daughter had moved to. So it was sad at the time. We rebuilt it, but when it was rebuilt, it didn't feel like the same house, and it was easier to let it go. And I've been in Los Angeles for the last 2.5 years. I love it here. I jumped right into service. My program is strong. I don't go to as many meetings as I did a few years ago, but I go to at least 2 a week. I need to hear what you have to say. Once I took the spiritual path and started loving myself, I stopped judging myself, I started forgiving myself, and I was a whole kinder, gentler person, because then I could love you and not judge you and, you know, be happy with you. And one of the readings of a day ago, I think it said something like, competition is for horses, not for artists. And I love that. I don't have to be in competition with anybody in these rooms. I don't want to be in competition. I want to be in love, in acceptance, and I learned all of that in these rooms. I love these rooms. The steps teach me how to live my life. I never lived my life. I didn't grow up saying, well, you follow the Ten Commandments. So the steps tell me how to live my life. I work on my defects. I try to get rid of them. I have a wonderful relationship with everyone in my life today. I left 50 of my nearest and dearest friends on Long Island. I'm so happy 2 of them came here to the birthday party. I made a whole group of new friends in Los Angeles. I have wonderful relationships. My daughter just had a baby 2.5 months ago on my birthday. So, of course, he's the love of my life. And my oldest granddaughter is getting married on Tuesday. So I'm all packed to leave for Israel tomorrow because they live in Jerusalem. My life is beyond my wildest dreams. It's just fantastic. And some days my food doesn't look great. And some days I say things that I wish I hadn't said. But by and large, you know, I'm living a wonderful life. I'm living a life that I feel like I'm in the penthouse. So I started to say I gained about 7 pounds a few years ago, and I struggled with that because I said, is this another relapse? But I was eating normally, but just my lifestyle's a little different now. We eat out more. I have a glass of wine here and there. And I don't want to restrict anymore. To maintain the weight I was maintaining, I would be happy when I got the flu, because then I could get a few pounds off, or when I went on a trip. Or it was a little bit of a deprivation plan. I'm not meant to be that skinny. This seems to be my poinsettia. And funny enough, it's the 147 that they told me 40 years ago in Weight Watchers. And so I had to get rid of the size 8s in the closet, be content with the 10s and 12s. And someone mentioned a few weeks ago that Marilyn Monroe was a size 12. And she was always a beautiful, voluptuous woman to me. So if she can be happy at a size 12, so can I. My self-esteem was always wrapped up with how thin I was. And this program has taught me that there's a lot more to me than my outside, and I can be happy at this weight and, you know, having a little bit more flesh on me than I'm used to. It doesn't mean that I'm in relapse, because I follow my food plan. I eat without guilt. I guess I'm just kind and gentle to myself, and I just share what works for me. I'm honest with my food, and I guess if I can leave you with one thing, it's that, you know, relapse, they say it's not a necessity in this program. So, but if you feel that you're in relapse and there's no getting out, you know, if you just keep it, stay in the rooms, don't go, you know, don't leave the rooms. Even when I was all chocolatey and, you know, the stuff was all over, the powdered sugar on me, I still came to meetings, and eventually the miracle will happen. Thanks for letting me share.
Now is time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand and I will call on as many questions as possible. Your question can be directed at one of us specifically or for the whole panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel and when asking questions, your voice may be audible. A timer, can you just time 18 minutes? In 18 minutes, we'll do the last question. Who has a question? I guess we said it all. Yes.
I have a question. You guys can answer it individually. Did you ever have a daily relapse or, you know, in the morning and then get back on the wagon? I guess a short-term relapse. And if so, what did you do to get yourself back on track so it didn't turn into one day, 2 days, and weeks and months and months?
Okay, so the question is, what is the length of the relapse? Was it a daily relapse? Was it, and were there any tools or things we could do to get back on track, or was it longer?
Yes, I'm Carol. I don't think I ever had one day relapse, because I would beat myself up so much over that, whatever I did that day, that it would go into longer.
I also, unfortunately, did not have that experience. I did, at times, try really, really hard to white-knuckle abstinence. And then, you know, by the end of the day or middle of the day, I would find myself eating something wrong. But I was never really able to go back. It always accelerated. Whereas now, in abstinence, when I eat soberly, if I make a bad choice, I'll give you an example of your, yes, my answer to your question will be yes, but it's not relapse. So my granddaughter was visiting for 2.5 weeks with her parents until a week ago. And having a toddler in the house, you know, the food that I had was very different than what we eat. And there was one day that I was very, very upset at something that happened at work. And I found myself coming home and eating 2 slices of pizza, which is not breaking my abstinence, because as you remember, it's not on the dessert menu of any restaurant, pizza, but it's definitely not something I eat regularly. So what I did, I finished the 2 slices, and I did 4 things. First, I went to the bathroom, locked the door, got down on my knees, and said, God, the way I ate those 2 slices of pizza was really scary. Then, praying to God sometimes is not enough. I need to hear his message through you. So then I went and I made 2 phone calls. One to somebody who has been in program for a long time and is abstinent. And I told her I ate 2 slices of pizza and I'm freaking out. And then I called a newcomer that I saw in a meeting once and never saw her again. And she's somebody who gained in relapse 175 pounds. And I talked to her for 30 minutes. And by the end of those things, I knew that I'm okay. And I brushed my teeth and flossed, which is something I do at night very early, not before I go to bed, because that gives my brain the message that I'm done for today. So, yes, so that happened, but I don't call it relapse, but I call it an episode that I needed to be very serious in how I dealt with it, because it's dangerous for me.
I think that when I try, yes, the answer for me is also yes. Sometimes I would have a day, but when I try to fix it by the food, by changing the food or, you know, just focusing on the food, that really didn't work too well. I needed to try to change what I was doing. Working on, you know, emotional maybe questions, working on step questions or spiritual, you know, doing something more spiritually, praying more. That, I think, is more
helped me more, the solution, to stay, to get back into recovery than, just, you know, digging in there and wanting to change the food plan, see a nutritionist. That's not really the answer. That's the problem. The solution is working it spiritually.
How your relapse changed the way you sponsor?
I have to say that my relapsing over the years changed the kind of sponsor that I have now, which in turn changes how I sponsor. I've been through the gamut of sponsors. I thought I needed to have one that would beat me up if I took an extra string bean because I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get it. So my sponsor before my current sponsor was very, very strict. And I would never, ever sponsor that way. I have a very gentle sponsor today. And I hope to God I'm a gentler sponsor from it. I don't see the point in beating any, but we beat ourselves up enough that we don't need anybody else doing it for us, boy. So I would just say I'm a gentler sponsor.
I'm also with Carol. I mean, I have been in that place for many, many years of not being able to do it. So I cannot expect my sponsees to be, you know, I've sponsored different people who are on different paths, and some of them never knew what a relapse is. But if I sponsor somebody who struggles with whatever it is, I am just present to offer my strength and my support, but my expectations are very low, and I just follow the lead of the person. So if I sponsor somebody who chooses only to call me once every 3 weeks because that's where they are today, then once every 3 weeks I'm loving and present. If they are able to call me every day and work the steps, that's even better for them. But I don't, I'm very, very, very gentle because I know that that's the only thing that worked for me. And people have different needs, and I feel that the only, you know, I said it to somebody, like somebody talked to me outside about sponsorship before the meeting, and I said, you know, the sponsor and the sponsee need to make sure that what they are doing is enhancing their journey to recovery. And as long as this is happening, that's a good sponsor-sponsee relationship. If my sponsee jeopardize, if let's say I sponsor somebody who deals with anger management and their anger scares me and affects my well-being, I can't sponsor them. But if somebody is in relapse or somebody struggles, I have more empathy and compassion than anyone because I've been there for 20 years.
That makes three of us because I also sponsor in a very loving way. In fact, when people tell me, you know, they broke their abstinence, even people I don't sponsor, I do everything I can to convince them they didn't break it, you know, because I really, that wasn't good for me always starting on day one again, day one again, day one again. It kept me in day one again. My current sponsor said, you're in recovery. There's no looking back. You're just moving forward. You fail forward. She helped me to just keep that momentum going because I don't really want to, I'm not going to start at day one anymore. Like I say, every day isn't perfect, but the next day I get up and, you know, perfectionism is one of my defects. So it can't be perfect. but I won't start with day one again. And so I'm loving and kind to all I sponsor. You can't do anything wrong. And it's not good for everybody. It's not right for everybody. So they find a sponsor that they need. For many years, I thought I needed a strict sponsor, but I don't. I need someone who's completely loving. Thanks.
Yes. So I can start. Okay, I don't know if you heard what I shared about God cries when bad things happen. So that's my way of reconnecting with God. I don't believe God caused my relapse. I don't believe that God wasn't there when I relapsed. You know the poem about the footprints on the sand? I believe that there are times when I can't feel God, but I can access that power that is greater than myself. Most of the time I feel that that power is inside of me. There are times when I feel that it's out in the universe. But whenever I struggle or whenever I have an episode like swallowing two slices of pizza with a straw without chewing them, then the next thing I have to do is go down on my knees and say, God, wherever you are, right now I need help because I'm in a very, very dangerous place. And I then need to reach out to humans, to people in the program and hear the message. Because when I'm in a good place, I can just reach out to God and I don't need to hear your voice. But when I'm in a bad place, praying is not enough for me. I need to hear God's message through the fellows. I hope that it answers a little.
Yes. I always thought I had a belief in God. Until I was doing the steps in the big book and I read We Agnostics again. I never thought that chapter was for me. I'm very involved in my church. I am in the Ministry of Consolation. I am an Eucharistic minister. I'm this, I'm that. I help special needs children learn about their religion. And I have to say, because I didn't think I was worthy enough to teach normal children, the typical children, I thought, well, I'll teach a special needs child because they won't expect so much. And all they really need, and the truth is that really is all they need, is to know that God loves them. And I hope I convey that message to these sweet children. But what I got out of working in that big book with reading We Agnostics, my sponsor had me read sentence by sentence and write paragraph by paragraph what came up for me as I read that paragraph. And I kept a notebook doing that. And I didn't realize that I really was an agnostic. I thought I had a belief in God. But somehow or another, God got in a different way. When I really went through that chapter, it was like a miracle. I never felt the closeness of God after reading that chapter. It was like a miracle in my life.
I'm not quite sure what... I guess I journal a lot, the writing sometimes, you know, really pleading with God, talking to God, writing down my food again, are the things that help me when I'm in trouble. Thanks.
Thank God we have people that know us so well, better than I know myself. There is something that I do, and I had told Ziva about it. I go to a spiritual direction like once a month. I haven't been there in a couple of months. But I was going to visit somebody that was very troublesome to me. And she said to me, you know, you wear scarves all the time. You really like them. I said, yeah, I do. She said, well, put on a scarf and have that as God going in with you. And I do that. I did it today when I put on this scarf. You know, so I guess I have little tricks that I do. Thank you for reminding me.
I think we have time for one. No, at 18, it's one more. So we have time if we need to. Okay. It looks like we're done with questions. Thank you to our timer.